In our last class, we were talking about the altar of witness. We were in Joshua 22, around verse 15, 16. And, you know, we saw in there what almost took place, and the reason for that. In verse 16, they came and they were talking about, well, they were about to say it backwards. The sons of Israel were talking about what they had seen as far as what the 2.5 tribes have done. And in verse 16, they said that they had committed an unfaithful act against God. And says, thus says the whole congregation of the Lord, what is this unfaithful act which you have committed against God of Israel? And because they were saying that they had turned away from following the Lord that day by building an altar, and that they were rebelling against the Lord. So in verse 18 and 20, pretty much where we left off, we saw that what they were worried about, what they feared. Remember, all of this started because of what they heard, and then they acted upon what they heard. And in verse 18 it says, it will come about if you rebel against the Lord today that he will be angry with the whole congregation. And the whole congregation of Israel tomorrow. And they had good reason to think of it that way. It's not a false statement. I mean, if they really were doing something that was against God, then it would or could affect all of Israel, just because what they have seen before in the past, and that's what they stated in verse 20. Said, did not Achan the son of Zerah act unfaithfully in the things under the ban, and the wrath fall on all the congregation of Israel? And that man did not perish alone in his iniquity. And that's true. You know, that when that happened, if you remember back about Ai, when all of that took place, or why they were unable to take Ai the first time. And when you think about what took place, those verses started talking about how Israel had sinned against God. And then it goes more into detail talking about Achan. So, and then we saw that, you know, all of Israel, because of this, that's when they lost Ai, the Battle of Ai, the first time. And because they didn't have the favor of the Lord. And then, but once they did regain that favor, then, you know, they had success. But regaining that favor is one of the very things we see at the end of verse 20 here. And it said, that man did not perish alone in his iniquity. So the cost of that, or because of what Achan had done, that affected his direct family and his belongings. I mean, it even talked about some of the livestock and all the stuff. And what had happened, that they were all stoned and then they were burned. So Israel's not wrong in thinking that this can affect them, because if what was taking place was correct, then yes, it could. But the whole problem is that they were acting on the wrong basis. So my point that I'm trying to make is, we can act and do the right action, but if we're doing it on the wrong basis, then then that's wrong. And that's what we see here. It's not necessarily that what they would have done was a wrong thing, but we see here that they acted just upon what they heard. There wasn't any discussion at this point. And then, as we said in the last class, I mean, this almost caused a civil war. They were ready for battle. They wanted to fight. And when we think about it, these are their brothers. They'd just been in battle on the same side, you know, side by side with one another. So you think about that. Think about the application with us. It could be our brethren. It could be our spouse, good friend, parents, children, depending on ages. This is something that we all can run into because basically just acting off of what you see and then implying the wrong thing. And that's because lack of communication here. It's because they didn't talk about it at first. And that's something that we can always run into. So I just want to warn us, talking to me too, that, you know, we've got to be careful. Just because we see something, or if we see somebody might have had an off day, and we might see how they're looking or something, or they don't seem happy, and that's a little different than this situation. But my point is, we can easily read things into stuff, so we got to be careful of that. And I think Steve brought up a good point in the last class. Someone that I believe he said another congregation where, you know, it was brought up that, hey, this, I believe, single lady, and they noticed there was a man living with her, and then they were going off the wrong path about that. It was a true statement. There was a man with her, but once they talked to her and figured it out, it was her brother. So it's, you know, their thought was going the wrong direction on what they saw. So we just have to be careful of that. That's something that we all can run into, and it's a good thing that we can learn from here. So, any comments or thoughts or no? Okay. So in verse 21 and following, the eastern tribes, the two and a half tribes, they're trying to explain in these verses following. And when they start talking about it, basically 22 through 23, they say what you were thinking, what you thought we're trying to do is not correct. Let's read 22. It says, "The mighty one, God, the Lord God," "He knows, and may Israel itself know, if it was in rebellion or if in an unfaithful act against the Lord, do not thou save us this day? If we have built us an altar to turn away from following the Lord, or if to offer a burnt offering or grain offering on it, or if to offer sacrifices of peace offerings on it, may the Lord himself require it." And then 29, verse 29, says, "Far be it from us that we should rebel against the Lord and turn away from following the Lord this day by building an altar for burnt offering, for grain offering, or for sacrifice, besides the altar of the Lord our God, which is before his tabernacle." And sandwiched in between these verses, this 23 and verse 29, kind of look at how some of these verses start off. Verse 24, it says, "But truly," and then verse 25, "for," verse 26, "therefore we said," and 27, "rather." So these are terms of explanation. So it's starting to explain some things in between this statement that had claimed. And they say this is the reason. It's in verse 24, but truly, we have done this out of concern. For a reason, saying, in time to come, your sons may say to our sons, what have you to do with the Lord, the God of Israel? For the Lord has made the Jordan a border between us and you, you sons of Reuben and sons of Gad. You have no portion in the Lord. So your sons may make our sons stop fearing the Lord. Therefore, we said, let us build an altar, not for burnt offering or for sacrifice. Rather, it shall be a witness between us and you. So this altar is to be a witness between them, between us and you, and between our generations after us, that we are to perform the service of the Lord before Him with our burnt offerings and with our sacrifices and with our peace offerings, that your sons may not say to our sons in time to come, you have no portion in the Lord. Therefore, we said, it shall come about, if they say this to us or to our congregations in the time to come, then we shall say, see, the copy of the altar of the Lord, which our fathers made, not for burnt offerings or for sacrifice, rather, it is a witness between us and you. So this was built as a witness or a reminder to them, to the generations to come. You know, because the idea is they're on the other side of the Jordan. So don't forget that we follow the Lord as well. We're part of that. And this is just to be a witness. And then we see their response, the sons of Israel, in verses 30 and 31. It says, so when Phinehas the priest and the leaders of the congregation, even the heads of the families of Israel who were with him, heard the words. So when they heard this explanation, which the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad and the sons of Manasseh spoke, it pleased them. And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest, said to the sons of Reuben and to the sons of Gad and to the sons of Manasseh, today, we know that the Lord is in our midst, because you have not committed this unfaithful act against the Lord. Now you have delivered the sons of Israel from the hand of the Lord. And then it goes on to say in verses 33 through 34 that the word was brought back, and the word pleased the sons of Israel, and the sons of Israel blessed God. And they did not speak of going up against them in war to destroy the land in which the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad were living. And the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad called the altar witness, for they said, it is a witness between us that the Lord is God. Any comments or thoughts before I keep going? Okay. Yes, sir, go ahead. As far as what I understand, because it even brought out that this is just a copy, and then it did mention that it was not for that use. So as far as I know, yes, unless anybody else has any thoughts or information on that. They did not, correct? Is that what you... Okay. Hearing. Okay, so that's what I was thinking too. It's not, so they, as far as I could tell, it did not use it for sacrifices. So, good question, Josh. So, like we said, this misunderstanding took place because of a lack of communication, but once they spoke and it was explained, all was good. So then there was a common understanding. And again, this is a lesson to us, the importance of communicating and how misunderstanding can happen because of a lack of communication. So another thing that I put on my notes that we can learn from this section, this, and I kind of mentioned it a little bit when we started, but this, again, they had been battling together. And when I say together, they're fighting on the same side, the same cause. And, you know, this short time, then they're giving up this unity. You would think that they would know more about their brothers. You would think that they know more about their actions and that they would had some type of trust built by now. And because they had each other's back in war. And that to me would take some trust. So again, when things come up, consider that. Consider what you know about the person. You know, because like I said, this could be a family member, a brethren, whoever. And we can easily fall in the trap of forgetting what we know about a person and assume something. So you see something that makes you have any kind of question, go to that person, talk about it. And then, you know, give them the benefit of the doubt until you have reason not to. So don't assume. Talk about it. I just thought that brings some, you know, this brings some good thoughts about that. And it's a good warning for us to consider. So now we can go into the next section. Joshua 23, and in Joshua 23, 1 through 16, they're exhorted to be faithful. Let's look at verse 6. Joshua 23, 6 through 8, we'll read that. It says, "Be very firm, then, to keep and do all that is written in the book of the law of Moses, so that you may not turn aside from it to the right hand or to the left, in order that you may not associate with these nations, these which remain among you, or mention the name of their gods, or make anyone swear by them, or serve them, or bow down to them. But you are to cling to the Lord your God, as you have done to this day." And then verse 11, "So take diligent heed to yourselves to love the Lord your God." And then it warns in verse 12, "For if you ever go back and cling to the rest of these nations, these which remain among you, and intermarry with them, so that you associate with them, and they with you, know with certainty that the Lord your God will not continue to drive these nations out from before you. But they shall be a snare and a trap to you, and a whip on your sides and thorns in your eyes, until you perish from off this good land which the Lord your God has given you." It says, "Now behold, today I am going the way of all the earth. and you know in all your hearts and in all your souls that not one word of all the good words which the Lord your God spoke concerning you has failed. All have been fulfilled for you. No, not one of them has failed. In verse 15, and it shall come about that just as all the good words which the Lord your God spoke, which the Lord your God spoke to you, have come upon you, so the Lord will bring upon you all the threats until he has destroyed you from off this good land which the Lord your God has given you. So it's urging to serve and warning what happens if you're not obedient. And then in chapter 24, it says, it's, you know, Joshua's farewell challenge to the nation. In the first 13 verses, it's kind of a recap or a reminder of all that the Lord had done for them. You know, it's talking about their past. So what should that cause in them, you know, when it talks about all these things? Just one note on mine in these verses from 1 through 16, I was just highlighting some of these words having to do with the Lord, and you just it just really shows up what all he has done, because that's what they're doing, just talking about all that he has done. You know, I gave, then I sent, I, and then, I mean, it just all throughout here. So that might be something you want to do if you have time, just to recognize what all God was bringing out, showing what he had done. And if you go down to verse 14, it says, now therefore, or because of this, fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and truth, and put away the gods of your father or your fathers. let me say that again. Put away the gods which your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. And then we have the verse that I think everybody has heard before. Very famous verse. Joshua says, you have to choose. A choice has to be made. And Joshua makes his famous statement about what his house will do. So verse 15, it says, and if it is disagreeable in your sight to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves today whom you will serve, whether the gods which your father served, which were beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. So Joshua states who he and his household are going to serve. And then verse 16, the people answer. Says, far be it from us that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods. And then they explain in the following two verses, it says, for the Lord our God is he who brought us and our fathers up out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, and who did these great signs in our sight, and preserved us through all the way in which we went, and among all the peoples through whose midst we passed. And the Lord drove out from before us all the peoples, even the Amorites who lived in the land. We also will serve the Lord, for he is our God. So you have this kind of back and forth going there between Joshua and the people, and he warns them, and they say they're going to serve God. And then verse 24 says we will serve the Lord our God and we'll obey his voice. And then in 25, Joshua makes a covenant with the people. It said, Joshua made a covenant with the people that day and made for them a statute and an ordinance in Shechem. And Joshua wrote these words in the book of the law of God, and he took a large stone and set it under the oak that was by the sanctuary of the Lord. And Joshua said to all the people, "Behold, this stone shall be for a witness against us, for it has heard all the words of the Lord which he spoke to us. Thus it shall be for a witness against you, lest you deny your God." And then Joshua dismissed the people, each to their inheritance. And then the last little section, 29 through 31, talks about Joshua's death and his legacy. Said it came about after these things that Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died, being 110 years old. And they buried him in the territory of his inheritance in Timnath-serah, which is in the hill country of Ephraim, on the north of Mount Gash. And Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who survived Joshua, and had known all the deeds of the Lord which he had done for Israel. So the people did as they stated. They served all the years of Joshua and then all of the years of the elders who survived Joshua. And then the last two verses are just talk about what they did with the bone. Well, it says, "Now they buried the bones of Joseph, which the sons of Israel brought up from Egypt at Shechem, in the piece of the ground which Jacob had bought for the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, for 100 pieces of money, and they became the inheritance of Joseph's sons. And Eleazar, the son of Aaron, died, and they buried him at Gibeah of Phinehas, his son, which was given him in the hill country of Ephraim." So we just have that last little section there, and that finishes Joshua. That's the end of Joshua. Any thoughts or comments? Okay. So then we'll get into introduction to Judges. So does anybody need, I think I have some up here. Anybody need a lesson that says introduction to Judges? We're all good? Good. Okay. So, what is a judge? I put on the lesson, I looked it up in Webster's Universal Dictionary, and several of the Websters are very similar. And it says, it defines a judge as, first definition, a public official with authority to hear and decide cases in a court of law. And that is a function of a judge. Before we say much more about that, let's go over to 1 Samuel for a minute. We'll look at 1 Samuel 7. Look at 1 Samuel 7, verses 15 through 17. It says, "Now Samuel judged," and I realize this isn't one of the judges we're looking at in Judges, but this helps us to define some of that word, at least the definition that we saw in Webster. It says, now Samuel judged Israel all the days of his life, and he used to go annually on circuit to Bethel and Gilgal and Mizpah, and he judged Israel in all these places. So what was he doing this? It said, then his return was to Ramah, and his house was there, and there he judged Israel, and he built an altar to the Lord. So this is showing that he was what they were calling a circuit, or went on an annual circuit, went to these cities, and he was to judge Israel or things that were going on in these places. And, you know, that's kind of what we saw in the definition. So these can be used to see things concerning civil law and those types of things. These judges could be doing that. Now, we're going to see when we look a little further into the book of Judges, we don't see much of that. We do have an example, though, we'll bring up. But, you know, so judges were to and could judge things concerning civil law. We see that here. And also, if we go over to chapter 12, I believe. Yes, 12. Three through five. And this is just some terminology that might be used when it comes to what we would think of as court. And not just that, some of the things that would cause the need for such a civil law. When you just look at some of these words here, it says, bear witness against me before the Lord and his anointed, whose ox have I taken? Or whose donkey have I taken? So who have I stolen from? Whom have I defrauded? Whom have I oppressed? Or from whose hand have I taken a bribe to blind my eyes with it? I will restore it to you. So basically, he said, what wrong have I done someone? And some of these are wrongs that you might see in court, things that we're needing judgment on. And he said, you have not defrauded. Did I hear something? 1 Samuel 12. I thought I said that. I'm sorry. Okay, I apologize. We're in 1 Samuel 12, 3 through 5. I might not have said the 12. So, 1 Samuel 12, 3 through 5. And then in verse 4, it says, and they said, you have not defrauded us, or oppressed us, or taken anything from any man's hand. And then he said to them, the Lord is witness against you, and his anointed is witness. This day that you have found nothing in my hand, and they said, he is witness. And again, just bringing this up as far as some of the things we could see in these statements, as far as we see that these are things that would need judgment on, or things that even today you might go to court over theft or being defrauded or bribery, any of those types of things. So I'm just trying to show that, yes, the definition that we saw in Webster could be correct. You know, of course we know it is today on how it's used, but what I'm saying is, that to me, I don't believe that would be an incorrect statement on how judges could be used. But what we're going to see in the book of Judges, that what they are seen doing is different. That doesn't mean it doesn't include some of these things. For example, you know, I was saying that, you know, we do have an example in Judges itself. If you look over in chapter 4, talking about Deborah, If you look at verses 4 through 5, and verse 4 states that she was judging in Israel at the time, and she used to sit under the palm tree of Deborah. And then the last part of the verse, it said, and the sons of Israel came up to her for judgment. So we can see that there was some of this civil type judgment going on. But mostly what you're going to see throughout the book of Judges is a different meaning. What we see emphasized in this book and what their mission is different. Let's go to chapter 2. We'll start in chapter 2, verse 16. Yes, Judges. So we're going to see that their mission is emphasized. In verse 16, it said, the Lord raised up judges who delivered them from the hands of those who plundered them. 18, the first part of it, said the Lord raised up judges for them. And the Lord was with the judge and delivered them from the hand of their enemies all the days of the judge. If you go over to chapter 3, verse 9, going to see some of the same idea. The Lord raised up a deliverer. And then in 3:15, said the Lord raised up a deliverer. Verse 31b, and he also saved Israel. So over and over you see this idea of a deliverer. And then 31b, a savior. So they were, this judge was to deliver them from something. They were to be deliverers. And we'll get into a little bit more of that here in just a second. So basically the outline of Judges is 1:1 through 3:6. That's the section that... Well, 1 through 3 is going to be the section we're going to study in our next class. But 1:1 through 3:6, we see Israel's disobedience and failure to drive out the nations. And we see the consequences of that. And then the apostasy and the oppression that goes on. And then in chapters 3, verse 7, all the way up to 16, chapter 16, verse 31... we're going to see these judges and the cycles that are going on. We'll say something about that here in a minute as well. And then chapter 17 through 21, that last section, it's just talking about the moral and spiritual condition of that age. So that's kind of a breakdown for judges. Linked to Joshua. So we just finished up Joshua, and now we're jumping into Judges here. Now think about it. Think about Israel's history, some of the things that we saw in Joshua. 40 years in the wilderness because of their sin. Then that generation was purged, and a new generation came up that Joshua led. And like we just looked at the end of Joshua in 31, look at Joshua 24:31 again real quick. It said, and Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders. So that was the part we just looked at. So we saw the faithfulness of those during the time of Joshua and the elders of that followed or survived Joshua. So we see that there. And then if you go over to where we just started, well, actually 24:29, while we're still here, we also see where it talks about his death. And then when you get into Judges 1:1, it talks about Joshua's death. It says, now came about after his death. And then in 24, I'm sorry, not 24, in 2:8, it has some more to say about Joshua's death. So, but then in verse, if you jump up to verse 7, again, we see how it said that the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who survived Joshua, who had seen all the great work of the Lord which he had done for Israel. So it's bringing back this thought of something we just finished looking at. And then if you read down to verse 10, so think about it. We're bringing out something we just ended Joshua with. It's talking about how they served Joshua and how the elders that survived, how they served during that time. And then you get to a change here because it brings out this very thing here in 2:7 through 10. And then you get to verse 10. It talks about in verse 10, it starts off talking about how all these that were serving the Lord, how that generation had died. It says, all that generation also who gathered or also were gathered to their fathers. And then you see a change. And it says, and there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord, nor yet the work which he had done for Israel. So we see something that's changing. This generation didn't know the Lord, and that's going to kind of start our path of the things we're going to start seeing. And Keith's about to buzz me. So we will pick up here in our next class. So we should finish this introduction in our next class, and we can get started on Joshua 1 through 3. So if you don't have one, I have copies in the back there. Thank you for your comments and your attention.